This is a meeting of the National Finance Committee, June 13th, 2017. And I believe we now have a quorum. R. Paul, can you take the roll?
Yes. Ken Aaron.
Here.
Sam Agarwal.
Yes.
Nick Arena.
Here.
Chris Corey.
Here.
Bill Crozier. Nick Economidis.
Here.
Sabrina Jacobs. R. Paul Martin here. Mansoor Sabah. Nancy Sorden. Alex Steinberg.
Present.
Okay, that's seven. That's a quorum. Is there anybody here who didn't answer up? Okay, still a quorum.
I think
seven.
I think you have eight people.
This is Ken. I don't believe you called for the CFO.
Yeah, I sure did, and he answered.
Okay.
Alex, you there?
We lose our chair.
Alex, you're speaking. We can't hear you, so maybe you're on mute or something.
I'm sorry. Yes, I was on mute. This is Alex Steinberg. The chair of this committee.
All right.
I think so. Let's proceed. We have a draft agenda. Can we have a motion to approve the draft agenda?
Point of order, Ken. I could not find the agenda. My computer's not working. Can you read it briefly?
Sure.
Can we have somebody make the motion? We need a name for the motion.
This is Ken. I just moved to read the agenda.
But in order to proceed, we need a motion. Can somebody make the motion to approve the agenda, and then I'll be glad to read it?
This is Ken. I move that we approve agenda, but that is read over the air so that everybody can hear it on the stream.
Okay. Okay. So we have a motion to approve the agenda. I'll read you the agenda. Number one is roll call, 2 minutes. We already did that. Number two, approval of minutes for the 5-2 meeting. That's 5 minutes. Number three is a report from the CFO. That's 60 minutes. Number four is motion submitted by Ken Aaron. And I gave the text of the motion at the end of this agenda. I hope you don't want me to read that. We can read that motion when it comes up, but I don't think we need to read it right now. Number five is timeline for 2017 budgets, 15 minutes. Number six is schedule next meeting, 5 minutes, and the last point is adjourn, time certain, 10:30 p.m. That's the agenda that went out. Are there any objections or amendments to this agenda?
R. Paul for stack?
Yes.
Nick Economidis for stack?
Okay. There are, how many? We have six outstanding minutes, sets of minutes. And do we want to only do the most recent? Because we should not let the other five languish and never be gotten to, because that would be a bad thing. So what do people want to do?
Well, if we're going to go through... that's a good question. I don't really know. what do people want to do? Does anybody have any ideas about that?
Can we do a blanket approval? Is that possible?
We can, but some people may want to actually look at those minutes before we vote on them.
I can understand that.
I didn't realize we had so many backed up minutes. Maybe what we should do then is table the minutes issue and take it up when we're prepared, better prepared, which will probably be at the next meeting. Would somebody like to make a motion to that effect, or if you have some other suggestion, that's fine.
To the floor.
Yeah, go ahead.
I alter that motion that we postpone approval of minutes prior to the last meeting. The last meeting's minutes we can approve because it should be still fresh in our minds. But the rest should be tabled until the next meeting.
Okay. We just made an amendment to a motion that's on the floor. Is there any objection to this amendment?
Point of order?
Yes. What is your point of order?
All right. The point of order is that the motion to approve the minutes only includes the minutes for May 2nd. And so there is no need to strike the other 5 minutes or do anything with them. So if nobody wants to do anything other than the May 2nd minutes, then nothing extra is needed because that's already what the motion says, the motion to adopt the agenda says.
You are indeed correct. So if you want to do what the main motion says, I guess we have to set aside the amendment that was offered.
The amendment is out of order. The amendment would be to strike what isn't being presented.
I thought there was an amendment to go. Okay, there was. You're right. There was no formal amendment to go through all the other minutes. Okay. All right. So. Are there any objections to the motion to approve the minutes from the May 2nd meeting?
Wait. The motion on the floor is to approve, to adopt the agenda.
Yes, you're right about that, too. The motion on the floor is to adopt the agenda. There was a discussion about amending that one item on the agenda, but nobody actually made a formal motion to do that. So we are still discussing adopting the agenda at this point. Are there any other objections or motions or amendments to the agenda?
Mr. Chairman, have you heard? This is Nicky Panamides.
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Mr. Chair, this is Nick Economides. May I be heard?
You may speak, Nick, yes.
I sent an email to the committee on the, I believe it was on the 18th of May, requesting that 3 items be added to the agenda of this meeting. I'd be glad to repeat those items for you, but for the moment, I would ask if those 3 items could be added to the end of the agenda.
Okay. Could you tell us what those 3 items are? I'm sorry, I don't remember this email.
Absolutely. The number one was we had a one-day special fund drive. I believe it was on March 2nd. I think that there should be some discussion around if the individual stations will receive any credit toward their central services for the results of that one-day fund drive. Number two, I'm hoping that we can come to a consensus and resolve receiving regular reports of the profit and loss statements for the various stations, as well as the current amount due or past due in arrears for essential services payments from each station. And number three, and this may already be part of the other motion on the agenda, is I believe that we should look at taking some sort of actions against stations that are significantly behind in their essential services payments.
Well, we already have a motion to that effect. It's a motion that we will be discussing. So you might want to look at that you might want to look at that motion and bring that item. If you have some differences, a different approach, you might want to discuss it when we're going to discuss that motion. Now, where exactly? So it sounds to me like you have two additional items to add to the agenda, and where would you like to put them?
Could we put them at the end of the agenda, I believe after item 5, before item 6, which I believe is scheduling the next meeting?
We could do that. Okay, so that'll so we'll add two more items after item 5. So number 6 will become item 8, and number 7 will become item 9.
Mr. Chair, it's Bill Crozier.
Yeah, can you send us the wording for those two items?
I will send the wording for those two items.
Okay, I appreciate that. Bill.
Alex, it's Bill. Oh, yeah, okay. I just want to make sure you could hear me because I was trying to answer earlier, and I don't think my phone is working, but I got it now. So, sorry, go ahead.
Okay.
I was wanting to hear Nick's motion.
Okay.
So thank you.
Well, I'd like to suggest one item myself that I'd like to amend the agenda slightly.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Did I read what I have as the motion?
Which motion?
The amendment. The amendment that Nick Economides just made.
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
To add after timeline for 2017 budgets of the agenda on the agenda, 1. Discussion/agreement on if/how stations will receive credit towards central services balances from the results of the special Pacifica one-day fund drive held March 2, 2017. 2. Regular/monthly reporting to the NFC/controller of 1. Updated P&L and 2. The balance of past due central services payments by stations. Now, there was a third, but I think you're saying that's extraneous because we're already doing that. Is that correct?
Well, it's dealing with the same topic that Ken Aaron's motion is dealing with.
Right. So are you saying there is a three or there isn't a three on this motion?
There is not a three.
Okay.
It could be handled under the discussion of Ken Aaron's motion.
Okay.
So I would like to introduce one other small change in the agenda. Just prior to adjournment, I would like to have a very brief discussion, shouldn't be more than 2 minutes, about whether this body would like to go into executive session in order to discuss some legal matters of a confidential. Did everybody hear me?
In order to discuss some legal matters, what?
Of a confidential nature.
Okay.
They would have to be discussed in closed session. We can vote on going into closed session if we so choose to do so. So I just like to add that as an agenda item to consider
okay.
that. Are there any objections?
No.
R-Paul.
Okay.
That's R-Paul.
I know people just don't pay attention to this, but you've already got one amendment on the floor. You really shouldn't have this, but since we always do this kind of thing, you know, I won't make a big thing out of it. But is this going to be about trying to do it tonight?
Yes.
Uh-huh. So this would be after schedule next meeting. So this would be
exactly.
After schedule next meeting. Okay. So this would be put in there, and there is this thing of we're supposed to give adequate notice of executive sessions, and there's
well,
no 7-day notice.
Yeah, but that's when we are planning to have an executive session. We did not plan this. Something just came up. And it's perfectly in order for a body to agree by majority vote to go into executive session. So I think it's perfectly valid.
Has this been cleared with the Pacifica compliance officer?
I'm not aware that it has, no, but it's my
what is that supposed to mean?
Well, we have a Pacifica meeting notice compliance officer, that's Otis McClay, and we could be in violation of certain rules. I don't mean just Pacifica rules, I mean FCC-CPB rules. By not giving adequate notice, and I would hope that maybe we could try to avoid making a mistake of that nature, which could cause a problem.
Well, if somebody if somebody wants to, while we're meeting, send notice a quick email and ask his opinion, we can do that. But I'd like to put it on the agenda in any case. And maybe we'll have an answer by the time we get to that item.
So the motion as I have it is after schedule next meeting to add an item to discuss an executive session to discuss a legal matter of a confidential nature.
That's correct. Would somebody be able to try to get a hold of Otis and ask his opinion on the legality of doing this? I believe Robert's Rules allows you to do this. So
I've been writing Otis an email right now.
Robert's Rules does not trump the Federal Communications Commission and Corporation for Public Broadcasting and probably a few others.
Well, okay, Federal Communications Commission and CPB are two completely different things. We're not in violation.
Yes, they are. They both have the same rule.
I'm not aware of that.
Okay, there you are.
CPB has something called its open meeting rules. I do not believe they would prevent us from going into executive session if we felt during an open session that a need arose to have an executive session. But I could be wrong, I certainly have no objections to asking our compliance officer about that. Okay. Anyway, at this point, we're simply asking if this could be on the agenda. Is there any objection to putting it on the agenda? Okay, seeing no objection, then that item is added to the draft agenda, and I think at this point we need to vote on approving the agenda as amended. Are there any objections to approving the agenda as amended?
Point of order?
Yes. Nick
Economides has made an amendment, and it has not been dealt with.
You're right. I thought we had. I'm sorry. Are there any objections to the amendments offered by Nick Economides to be added to the agenda? Okay, since there are no objections, those are now added to the draft agenda. And let's go back again. Are there any objections now to approving the agenda as amended? Okay, seeing no objections, the agenda as amended is approved. So we're on the approval of minutes for the May 2nd session. Are there any objections or any discussion about approving the May 2nd minutes? Seeing as there are no objections, the May 2nd minutes are approved. We're now up to item 3, report from our Chief Financial Officer. Sam, you have the floor.
Thank you very much, Alex, and good evening, everybody. So let me quickly give an update on some of the important matters. But before I begin, I would request this body to schedule an executive session at the end of the discussion because there are some important updates that I and Bill Crozier would like to give to you, to this body, and that we cannot discuss in an open session. So I will not mention those items in the open public meeting. So let me discuss what we can discuss in the open session. A couple of things. One is the audit for the fiscal year 15. They are going pretty well. I had a meeting with the auditors yesterday for about a couple of hours. Their whole team was here, and they are pretty satisfied with the progress that we have made so far, because we have uploaded most of the information that they had requested on their website, and now they have given some what we call the sample testing, the information that has to be pulled out from the stations, and that we have provided to different stations, and we will expect that in the next few days. I am having a meeting with the business managers every week to answer their questions and to expedite the process. So overall, it's going well. The second point that I would like to mention is about the central services. Although there is a resolution on the floor, but I would like to highlight some of the important things that are concerning the central services. I had sent a detailed statement to the committee, and that gives a breakdown of the current outstanding amounts from each station. I will not mention the name of the stations which are in default because I don't want any detrimental effect on the station itself, but it's very important to look at the balances outstanding. One station may be in arrears by about 250,000, other may be more than 150,000 or so. Over a period of 2 years, the national office has not received about 850,000 in all. Every month, almost, when we don't get the payment from three stations, it is about $44,000. Which roughly is about between 35% to 40% of our budget. So you can imagine the consequence that it has on the national office finances. And one typical example that I would like to give is about the delinquent audits. We could not pay for the audit fee. Now let me clarify, because this is a question that I get often, that central services is not a tax. It is the cost of shared services. It pays for the national office accounting team, the insurance and the legal expenses, the payroll processing fee, the audit fee that we have to get conducted every year. So these are legitimate business expenses that any business operation has to pay. These are unavoidable expenses. I mean, you can try not paying your accountant or your insurance bill a few months and see what happens. The reason why it is happening this way, because we don't have an enforcing mechanism. And that is the reason why some stations have chosen, and I would go on record, that they have chosen deliberately not to pay the central services because there is no consequence. And let me substantiate my point by saying that it's very hard to believe that any station will not have $10,000 in a month where it can make a partial payment.
Nancy Sorden, point of order.
You should let him finish up his sentence or his thoughts. He's giving us feedback.
What is your point of order, Ms. Sorden?
The CFO is slandering the non-stations. He's assuming that they are doing it on purpose. What if a station has to choose between paying payroll and central services? I don't think they do it on purpose. I think that's an assumption. I think that's assumption that slanders the intent of the station.
Ms. Sorden,
I think you should withdraw that comment. I guess it's a point of personal privilege.
Your point of order is not well taken. Go on, Sam.
So I don't make a comment very lightly, because when you look at the history, out of 18 months, if a station has not paid central services for 15 months, there's a pattern to it. And it cannot be excused or it cannot be ignored. Now, this becomes kind of very infectious, because when the other stations see that one station is not paying, the other would like to follow, because it's a very easy way out. This is how they can balance their cash flow and not have to suffer any consequence. And that is the result we are seeing, that say almost three stations are in perpetual default. So I would recommend that the National Finance Committee considers this this motion that has been put forward very seriously. And there should be some kind of enforcing mechanism to make sure that the payments are made. I am not getting into details or any specific comment about the station, but I will be happy to elaborate on that in the closed session, because then I will give a little bit more concrete example how this has been evaded. So let me end my discussion at this point. I can elaborate further during question and answers session.
Okay, thank you, Sam. Do we have some questions or discussion?
Yeah, this is Nick Arena for the STAC.
R. Paul for STAC.
Anybody else?
Yeah, okay. Chris Corey would like to get on the STAC as well.
Okay, so I have Nick, R. Paul, and Chris. Okay, Nick, go ahead.
So I'm going to reserve the comments regarding the delay in payment of central services for the closed session. But I would like to ask Sam some questions about the 2015 audit and the costs associated with it. Do we have sufficient funds based on the engagement of the 2015 auditors currently to pay them to do do the audit work? And then related to that is the engagement by the 2015 auditors that was signed, does that also include them doing the 2016 audit so that we'd be using the same firm?
Yeah, thank you, Nick, for giving me the opportunity to clarify on this issue, because in my CFO report, I had mentioned that we collected $200,000. I think it was in March, somewhere around that. Out of that, $86,000 was restricted grant. That is a commitment from the part of the donor to pay for the audit fee, and that money is not coming at all to the national office. That is reserved for fiscal year 15 audit fee alone. So that will, by itself, that will cover the audit fee. So I can say that, yeah, we are covered for the audit for fiscal year 15. But there is another substantial cost that we are incurring because the books are not complete and because we have to hire some temporary staffing. And your station is one where we need some temporary help, and I have already approved that. So that will be additional cost apart from the staffing cost that we will have to have at the national office because there's substantial deficiency. There was substantial deficiency for the last 2 months or so, which we had to remove. So overall, I am very confident about saying that there's sufficient money for fiscal year 15 audit. I will not be so confident about fiscal year 16 because definitely we don't have the money. And to answer your second part of the question, we have not signed the agreement with the existing auditors for fiscal year 16 because we are not ready. We have to roll over the balances after the audit is done for fiscal year 15 to fiscal year 16, and then also we have to do a lot of work to prepare the books so that they can be audited. But I have mentioned to them the timeline that we would definitely like to be in compliance by spring of 2018 so that we can file the CPB reports. So that's pretty much our commitment at this time.
Nancy to the stack.
Okay. R. Paul, you're next.
Who's next?
Yes.
R. Paul.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now, we have had a WBAI local finance committee meeting a while back, you know, a couple weeks ago. And during that committee meeting, I had to tell the committee that I was not allowed to say how far in arrears WBAI is in its central services payments. And the committee was very adamant that I should bring this up at this NFC meeting and say that the sense of the committee is that I should be able to tell them this. I agree with that. I think, you know, I think the time for fig leaves is not this time, and I think that we should be able to say, hey, local finance committee, here's the transparent reality of central services payments. It isn't as if you need Sherlock Holmes to come in and figure out which stations are behind, because if anybody has any historic outlook on how this has been going for years and years, you can guess very easily which stations are behind on central services. So I have brought up what I am mandated to bring up, and I agree with it. I think we should be able to say, to tell our local finance committees, yeah, the station is X amount of money behind at this time. And I do realize that it's a very big issue here. And the other thing I have is, I guess the thing is about FY16 audit that we, since we're not ready, we just can't risk the FY15 audit. I mean, that's my sense here. It would be wonderful if we could have said, hey, do 15 and 16 together because it probably have cost less. But, all right, that's it for me.
Okay, Chris, it's your turn.
Yeah, my question was actually already answered, thankfully.
Bill Crozier for the stack.
Alex?
Are you muted, Alex?
Yeah, Nancy, it's Nancy's turn to speak now.
Okay. I also would like to comment on another one of Sam's statements, in that he made a blanket statement about central services not being paid consistently for so many months by the stations, and that is misleading. It's not true, and therefore it's misleading.
Point of order, please.
Wait a minute.
No, point of order.
What is your point of order? Is that Mansoor?
I think the issue that Nancy's raising up, it's already moot, and you already disqualified that. So I think she needs to talk about something else.
This is different.
No, it's the same.
No, you just said the same thing.
No, it's not. The same no, thing. No, I did not.
No, your point was not well taken. Your point was not well taken, so just stop, okay?
I said I had another.
Okay. Your house is burning, and you want to start mess. Why do you want to keep doing this?
I did not recognize you. Please, Scott. I did not recognize you either, Mansoor. I asked you for your point of order. I did not give you permission to speak after that. I don't believe you're correct, Mansoor, and I think your point of order is not well taken. Ms. Zordon, you may go on.
Thank you. I listened to the finance. I was on the finance committee before, and I listened to the finance committees last year, and I know that the stations paid when they could during the year. They may have a number of months that they have not paid, but it was not every single month, as Sam has led us to believe. And so his theory about people using this as a consistent way to get out of paying central services is just that. It's a theory. And it's, you know, a theory that people may look at that and, you know, try to do the same thing, but that's, you know, it's just misleading and not true what he said, and I just want to set the record straight. And then I have a question for Sam.
Can I respond to this comment?
I have a question first. I have a question. You could respond to both.
Let Ms. Zordon finish first, okay? Go ahead, Ms. Zordon.
Okay, I would just like some clarification on the audit money. You said that the $86,000 restricted was enough to pay for the audit, but the rest of it is going to be used to pay for the expenses for the staff to help with the audit. So my question is, are we to expect money from the national office to cover the expenses of the people that we hire to help do, you know, collect our data for the audit, and we won't have to pay their costs.
Sam, before you may respond at this point.
Okay, so to respond to the first question, that my comments are misleading, I will point this body to take a look at the spreadsheet that I have sent to everybody, and the numbers are very clear. The facts are very clear. They are not misleading. They are not a lie. You can see each month when the payment has not been made. There's a consistent pattern to it. So I'll stop at that point. Second thing that is very important, that we definitely need temporary staffing, and I have already approved for WPFW. But the problem that I'm running into is that I'm not, the station is not recommending a good candidate to be hired. So I'm working with the Nick Arena on that aspect. It is very, very urgent. There are two components to that. National office will definitely pay for the part which is covering the audit preparation. The second part is because we don't have a good accounting staff there at PFW. So the station should meet those expenses. So to answer the question, yes, National Office will definitely put the cost for the preparation of a fiscal 15 audit.
Okay, thank you, Sam. I think Bill was next on the stack.
Yeah,
I would like to be on stack too, please. Mansoor would like to be on stack.
Economist for the stack.
Okay. Mansoor and Nick after Bill. Go ahead, Bill.
Yeah, and to answer our polls question, I don't think there's any reason why you should not tell your committee and the public what the central services are owed for your station or any other station. I told KPFT's LSB that information, and I wouldn't mind telling everybody unless Sam has some objections. I think it's part of transparency. There's nothing confidential about that information. It doesn't have anything to do with personnel or legal that I can think of.
Can I respond to that?
I'll let Sam respond.
Yeah. The reason why I had asked Paul to be a little cautious about that and not to mention those numbers at the public meetings because they get blown out of proportion. And what has happened that I got many phone calls when those discussions happened. And in fact, in one of the cases, the vendor canceled the contract. So they are not taken in the context in which they are spoken, but they are taken, say, in respect to the credit worthiness of the station. And so it has broader ramifications, and that's the reason why I'm in this public meeting also, I'm not naming the stations, say, as such. That was my only caution. I would leave it up to the judgment of this body, actually. If they decide to make it public, that's fine. But I make sure that, say, this body knows what these central services outstanding payments are.
Okay. Mansoor is next.
Sure. I just wanted to, I think some Pacificans don't realize the seriousness of the financial problems that we are facing. So I want to ask Sam not to reveal any top secrets, but to tell us how serious the financial difficulties we have. If Pacifica is a patient, what kind of sickness does it have and how much time does it have to live?
That's a very good question, and I look forward to these kind of discussions so kind of, I would say, desperately, because I mean, we cannot ignore the elephant in the room. Everybody knows that we are having a difficult financial situation and difficult financial conditions, and we need solutions. I can only make a broader statement in this public meeting. I cannot get into details, say, for obvious reasons, because we don't want to lose support from the listeners. But if I were to kind of give a kind of an example that we are in critical condition, no doubts about it. And there are three stations which are not breaking even at this time, which is not really acceptable. The two stations which are doing okay, they are also kind of barely scraping by because there are some legal obligations that they have not met, they have not paid. With the lack of central services payments to the national office, its finances are having a devastating consequence. I mean, I have been on record to say that we have been delinquent in the audits, but probably the AG letter, I mean, that is also a public record, that if I can point out, it mentions that we have not been timely in filing the income tax, the tax returns, the Form 990 that has to be filed. Apart from that, it's so difficult to retain the staff, because that is my constant struggle, that when you are going through such difficulties, who would like to work in that organization? And I think that will be true across different stations or across the network. So Mansoor, I mean, I can go on and on this topic. It is very important to me. It is very dear to me. But I don't want to take too much time. The only thing I would like to say, that probably we may have to turn the focus of this National Finance Committee meeting into a problem solving, into some kind of a mechanism that say we can figure out how to move Pacifica forward in a much healthier way, rather than just struggling day by day and not knowing what's next. But I will be very more than willing. Actually, I would like to. That's the reason why I've requested a closed session, and I will get into more details with this.
Okay, I forget. Who else was on a stack at this point?
I believe that I was on.
Is that Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, I had some requests for information. Sam referred to a spreadsheet. I saw an email from him for this meeting that gave a total. The spreadsheet lumped everything together. I'm not sure what spreadsheet he's talking about that shows that people were consistently not paying their central services. I know for a fact that it was not every single month that stations, more than one station across the network were spotty in their central services, but it was not, I couldn't see a consistent pattern to the payment sheets. I've seen previous spreadsheets of months that central services has been paid by different stations, and it hasn't really been, a consistent pattern unless it has been lumped with the fund drives when money is tight in between fund drives. And the other question that I had was I forgot. I'm sorry. If I think of it, I'll. Yeah.
Ms. Sorden, just as a point of information, the spreadsheet that Sam sent has different tabs. Each of those tabs corresponds to a month, so you can see the payments month by month.
Thank you very
much. Anybody else on the stack?
Okay, thank you very much.
This is Nick Economides. I believe I was in the stack.
Oh, okay, Nick. Go ahead.
Really the same question. I have Sam's email. Let me see if I can get the date here, June 6th, which lists the amounts past due. I don't believe I have that spreadsheet. Is it possible that we could get that sent to us again?
Yeah, I can send that again. Not a problem. But like Alex said, that it has multiple tabs, but then there is a summary tab. In the summary tab, you will see that each station is listed, and for each month, it goes back only until October of 2015. So we have not been tracking this because there was only one station which was in serious default. And so that's a lump sum amount that we show as outstanding. But from October 2015 till date, you will see each month when the station has not paid the central services and also the healthcare, because some stations are in default even paying the healthcare premium.
Thank you, Sam. If I may make a quick additional statement, to Ms. Jordan, I think it's fair to say that at least from KPFT's standpoint, the failure to pay central services is not intentional. But on the other hand, to Sam's point, I think the lack of ramifications plays a big role into our failure to make our central services payments.
This is Nick Arena for the stack.
Arpal for stack.
Okay, Nick, and then Arpal. Go ahead, Nick.
I want to address something regarding the central services payments and the accounting of those. It is that the central services payments, when they're made, they apply to the oldest payment that hasn't been made. So in the case of WPFW, we have made, I want to say, 5 or 6 payments in this fiscal year, but those payments don't apply to this fiscal year. They apply to the oldest payments first. So we had a substantial change in staff in 2015 with a very tumultuous change in general manager who did not assumed the role until late into 2015. And so the payments that are reflected in arrears do reflect the fact that payments weren't made in 2015. But those relate to things that were not part of my tenure as treasurer, nor as the general manager's tenure as general manager. In the time after he became general manager, again, the station has been a bit with a couple hands tied behind its back. We've been operating with 10% power with transmitter and other electronic issues that date back to 40 years ago that took over a year to correct with the help of engineers and contractors to make sure that we're operating at full power. And I think that many people on this call, what they don't know is that since the station has been returned to its full power, 50,000 watts, our last two fund drives have been the two largest in recent memory. And to say that in our spring fund drive, we actually exceeded our goal. But we do need those funds to take care of the day-to-day operations of the station. But we are being current with our central services. And we did miss a couple payments in the fiscal year, but we are catching up, and we have plans to catch up on the outstanding payments for health insurance from the previous year. But I think it's still important to remember the context of things. Everyone's aware that there's changes every year to LSB board members. There's changes that have happened to staff. There's changes that happen on a national level. And I reiterate what Nick just said about his station, what Nancy said earlier, is that the WPFW has not neglected making its payments because it was doing so out of some sort of nefarious reasons. It was simply to stay current with our rent, to pay our employees, and to keep the station on the air. And I would hope that in the spirit of how Bill and Sam have cast the request, which was we need to work together, that we remember that we are all trying to keep our stations afloat in difficult times. And I'll relate some of the more private things about our cost structure in the closed session, but I think people do need to remember that that no one is spending money in a inappropriate way. We simply have had some things that have limited our capacity to raise money, that have limited the station's ability to reach its audience, and that have impacted our financials, and that we have turned a significant corner in this fiscal year. And we ask for the partnership of our other stations and Pacifica to help us continue to make the changes that we're making to be successful.
Can I respond?
Get into the stack.
Mansoor would like to be at your stack.
Okay, and I would take the opportunity to speak.
This is Ken. I haven't been on the stack on this subject yet.
I understand. I will take the opportunity to speak on this subject myself after everybody else is finished. I believe the next person on the stack is R. Paul.
Okay. Yes, I don't think anybody's being horrible and mean. I agree that stations are trying to meet their operating expenses. On the other hand, you know, the reason why there's a hole in the bottom of the boat may be a little bit moot as the water rises. Mr. Chair, would it be in order for me to ask questions about something else, specifically the P&L we got for 6 months?
It would be in order, as this is part of the CFO's report. So
okay.
Go ahead.
All right. We have the P&L for the 6 months ending March 31st, 2017. Looking on the WBAI tab, line 92, rent tower. In 2016, The figure is given as $50,102 a month. In 2017, it's given as $50,055 a month. However, if you look at the lease gives an increase of $2,762 per month for 2017. So that means that the 2017 tower rent has to be at least $2,700 and change higher than what's in 2016, because it changes over every January 1st. And of course, the Empire State Building adds more and more onto the nominal amount. This is not counting the utilities. This is just the nominal amount gets added onto with various COLAs because it's a wonderful lease for landlords. And so there's a question about that particular line there. And specifically, also the general manager, the WBAI general manager, was telling the local finance committee last year that the lease was costing about $55,000 a month without the utilities. And then we have cells 92V and 92W. 92V gives the tower rent gives the tower rent for February 2017 as $2,055. And then you've got March of 2017 as $34,275, which is obviously quite a bit less than what the reality must be. So I'm wondering what the situation is here. Are these just, some sort of typos or something, or what? Because it will impact the year-to-date bottom line on that of $236,691 by quite a nice piece of five figures. So I'm asking the CFO if he can clarify that for us. Thank you.
So, Paul, your question is correct. Those numbers, there are a number of things that are happening, and that is the reason why these numbers are not correct. First of all, we don't account for the interest and the late fee and other charges that are levied by the Empire State every month. So you will find that a discrepancy. The second thing is that you know that we are not current in our bookkeeping, so we are booking every month a kind of an estimated charge. And that is very close to what the rental was for 2015 and 2016. These will all be trued up as we correct the books for audit stage or for any presentation. So right now, those numbers are you can say that those are ballpark numbers. Those are not exact to the penny. But then there is another component that is going on, and that we can discuss only in the closed session.
Yeah, can I have a fast follow-up with that? But in that, I mean, one of those things is off by 15 grand, and the other is off by about 48 grand. So these are not small discrepancies. I mean, January's 50,000 and February's 2,000. So, I mean, are you saying that it's just that there are actual mistakes? It's not simply a typo, but this is somehow being carried as real because somebody made a mistake somewhere, or what?
No, I will not say that. If you're seeing $2,000 as compared to $50,000, then that's a very serious mistake. I don't know how that happened because it generally does not happen. And the other thing is that month's income statement will be completely off. So I have not seen that kind of pattern happening. I can take a look, but if that number is showing 2,000, then definitely there's a serious mistake, and we will revise that.
Bill for the stack.
Okay. Bill, I think Ken was next.